Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. Spill your under. We'll be broken by Chris Jericho. All right, the People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride.
Take a man.
Do You Want to Start a War, the title track from the new Fozzy record. Wanted to play it for you today because guess what? The video premiered exclusively today on loudwire.com. Do You Want to Start a War? Definitely one of the best videos we've ever done, if not the best. We filmed this back in July in Los Angeles. This has got everything. It's got smoke. It's got fire. It's got cool lighting. It's got a great band. It's got five sexy ladies that do a choreographed dance routine. When's the last time you saw that in a video that didn't feature Britney Spears? I mean, come on, only with Fozzy can you check that out. Very cool drone cameras on the rooftop. So many, many cool things. A lot of work and effort and editing. It's all in the editing, kids. Went into this video. Premiered today at loudwire.com. If you want to check out the video for Do You Want to Start a War, that's when you can find it. Also, don't forget, we are starting a tour. Do you want to start a tour? Do you want to start a tour? November 20th. We are going on the Cinderblock Party with Texas Hippie Coalition and Shaman's Harvest. And we are starting that in Flint, Michigan on November 20th. And then we're taking it all around the nation, or most of the nation. Michigan, Illinois, Minneapolis, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Texas, Louisiana, Florida. We got a lot of Florida shows. If you want to check out the dates, go to FozzyRock.com. But that starts November 20th, Flint, 21st, Steger, Illinois. Illinois, is it Illinois or Illinois? I don't know, I'm from Canada. So it's Illinois, eh? 22nd, Minneapolis, Minnesota. 23rd, Des Moines, Iowa. 24th, St. Louis. 25th, Rockford, Illinois. 26th, Kenosha. 28th, Joplin. 29th, Lubbock. 30th, Dallas. December 2nd, San Antonio. 3rd, Houston. 4th, New Orleans. 5th, Destin, Florida. December 6th, Jacksonville. 7th, Cape Coral. 9th, Gainesville. 10th, West Palm Beach. 11th, Orlando. 12th, we finish off the tour in St. Pete, Florida at the State Theater. Go to FozzyRock.com and get all the dates. And then after that, we head over to the UK, Ireland, England, Scotland for the Cinderblock Party World Tour with the Dirty Youth. That starts off March 4th in Belfast, goes all the way through Cork, Dublin, Nottingham, Wolverhampton, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Exeter, Southampton, Brighton. If you live in one of those cities, go to FozzyRock.com and get all the information on the Cinderblock Party Tour. But guess who else is heading overseas? My old pal, William Regal. He's taking his one-man show to the UK. You can see him at The Garage in Glasgow on November 9th, which just so happens to be my birthday. That show starts at 5 p.m. local time. He's also going to be at the Blue Room in Liverpool, England, home of the Beatles. I know people in Liverpool hate that, but I love the Beatles, as you know, so I'll always say that. Lots of great Liverpool stories in the new book, The Best in the World, at What I Have No Idea. Go check it out. Regal will be in Liverpool on November 10th and 11th, two nights right after Raw and SmackDown. Showtime for Regal is 11 p.m. local time, so you can go check out his show after you do Raw and after you do SmackDown. Just walk right across the street and see Regal, literally just a couple minutes away. I might go check him out on November 10th myself. November 11th after the SmackDown show. I will be in the UK November 10th, Bournemouth, November 11th, Liverpool, 12th, Newcastle, 13th, Glasgow, 14th, Braunschweig, Germany, and 15th, Frankfurt. I'm back for six shows and six shows only, so come check me out there. And also on November 11th, I have a book signing at the Liverpool Waterstones. That's at noon. Come on down, get your book signed. All right. So many cool things coming up, including today, Dolph Ziggler, part one, and also M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold, kicking off the show, going to tell us all about their new video game, Hail to the King Deathbat. Huge, huge hit, and Shadows wrote and produced this whole video game. Came up with it, sat in on it the whole way. He is branching out. Not only is he a great rock and roll singer and a huge band, but now he designs video games too. And that's one thing I've definitely never done, create a video game. But if I wanted to buy a book telling me how, I would do that through Amazon. And as I went to shop at Amazon, I would use my own link. All right. The Talk is Jericho Amazon link. It's the easiest way to support the show. And every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada. Hey, just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. For instance, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? or my new book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Book has been a huge success, my third bestseller in a row, and people are saying it's the best of the three Jericho books. If you haven't read this book and you are a Jericho fan, what are you waiting for? I will say it's definitely my favorite of the three as well. So many cool tales, fun stories, ridiculous moments, all encapsulated in a fine, fine hardcover book with some fine pictures as well. The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. Go to Amazon and buy it. Go check out Avenged Sevenfold's records. Get Hail to the King. Get Nightmare. Get the White Album. So many great, great records all on Amazon. Listen, you can buy whatever you want. Furniture, a big screen TV, a mirror. I bought some really cool bracelets the other day. You can tell I'm just looking around the room, seeing whatever I can see. Microphones, picture frames, little statues of Doberman pinchers. You can get all that stuff on Amazon and buy whatever you want. And if you do that through my link, it won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees, all charges. If you happen to be doing some Amazon shopping, you can help out the show and me in the process. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button, and you can bookmark it so you can get those links in one easy click. All right. Last week, we had Eli Roth on the show right before Lloyd Kaufman. An amazing show if you love Hollywood and if you love horror movies. And as you know, Eli started the hashtag 6-second scare contest on Vine or Twitter. You just post a 6-second horror movie. The winner is called Monster in the House. It's incredible. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out now. But also, my son Ash and I had our own entrant. It was called Chop Chop Son. People seem to really dig it. It's got over 50,000 views on Viner, probably more now. But even better was that it appeared on Good Morning America and Nightline. There was a story on the 6-second scare contest, and for whatever reason, those ABC people chose Ash's video and showed half of it, like 3 seconds of it. But Ash is famous. He's famous for being the fish expert here and famous for being on Good Morning America and Nightline. And the coolest thing was Eli had nothing to do with that, with Ash being on there. They just chose it because he's so dang cool. Dolph Ziggler and Doc Amon coming up with myself in a triad of ridiculousness. But first, M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold checks in to tell us all about his new video game, Hail to the King, Death Bat. All right, on the line, I got my good friend M Shadows is here. How you doing, M?
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Good. It's good to talk to you. It's funny because it seems like I talk to you like almost every day, but it's always text.
I know. Well, you know, I got to get my dose of Jericho. So it is good to talk to you, dude.
It's the way of the world now, though, man. But yeah, but I wanted to have you on just quickly just to kind of touch base and get an update. But first and foremost, congratulations on Hail to the King Death Bat, your video game that you created meticulously. Huge, huge success. Just came out a couple weeks ago. Fourth downloaded app on Android. That's massive.
Yeah, man, it was a surprise. And we're just trying to keep pushing it, you know. Just another way to get creative. And I saw your son was playing it, so it must be doing good.
He tried, man. He was getting a little bit frustrated because, as you mentioned, we talked about this almost a year ago now. I think it was back last September when you were still in the midst of kind of creating it. But you created this, and it was not supposed to be an Angry Bird, Candy Crush type of a game. It is an intricate, hard game, and I watched him try and figure it out, and there's a lot of stuff to it.
Yeah, there is. And also, you know, virtual controls are tough. So a lot mm-hmm. of people have to get used to using controllers on their, you know, their iPhone or their iPad. So it's a different beast, but once you get a hang of it, it's pretty usable.
No, and you created this specifically for it to be an app. You never wanted it to be like a PlayStation cartridge or anything like that.
No, those games are, you know, when you're using consoles of that magnitude, the quality is expected to be a lot higher, and that is a lot more money. You know, that's like mm-hmm. honestly, like those games cost everywhere from, you know, $1 million to, you know, that's on the lower end to about $200 million for some of those console games.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. So, like Call of Duty and those games cost around $250 million to make. So
this was a cheaper way to kind of create your vision.
Well, and another thing for us was, you know, we want every fan to play it, and you know, I can't sit here and say every fan has a smartphone, but you know, most people mm-hmm. have smartphones, and there's a lot of casual people out there that. Or gamers out there that would be like, okay, I would be interested in an Avenged Sevenfold game, but I don't have, you know, Xbox One or Xbox 360 or whatever. So, you know, being a band and making a game, it's one of those things where you want to get in most people's hands because you know how it is. You know, you do stuff for people and then they get mad at you if they can't partake in it as if you're, you know, trying to be a jerk just to them. But we didn't want to do that and alienate anyone.
Now, I mean, I was watching, actually Ash downloaded it on his iPad so you could actually see it even bigger. And the graphics on it are amazing. Like, you guys put a lot of time into this. Who did you hook up with? I mean, obviously, I mean, I know you wrote the concept of the game, but to program it and to kind of relate your vision, how do you do that? Did you have some friends? Did you make some friends? Did you hire an outsourced company?
Yeah, pretty much made some friends. You know, I had a buddy who was doing music for mobile games, and he introduced me to the company he was working with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just two guys. A guy named Matt Newman and a guy named Michael Stragey, and one's a programmer and one's a designer, and we all got together and got this vision together, and basically that's why it took 2.5 years to develop. You know, I'm sure if we had a full team, we could have done it in 6 months or 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just three of us, and it was a lot of trial and error, and yeah, I mean, it turned out really good for a mobile game. It's built a little differently than most mobile games, which is more on the technical side, and I'm sure no one cares about. But so you get kind of the cooler graphics, but at the same time, you know, it's a very organic feeling, and it's a very open world feel, which you don't get in most video games. So there's a lot of things it's doing that is kind of bucking trends in terms of mobile games. But, you know, that's all technical stuff, and the bottom line is, you know, it looks good, it feels good, and, you know, the fans really enjoy it. Obviously, you know, the reviews have been really good, which has been surprising to me.
Well, and like you said, the success of it as well, people are really, really buying it and checking it out. Now, it is an Avenged Sevenfold themed game. So just tell us quickly the plot line, the summary of what the game is about.
Well, we wanted to do something, you know, based on our Deathbat logo.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with a story. You know, it's a little different play on good versus evil, which basically all games are.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, there's a war, or there's three gods that kind of create all the planets in the universe. And they had a bet one day that, you know, good and evil couldn't exist on the same planet, and evil would always overcome.
Mm-hmm.
So they created its own planet, or a planet just to have this wager on. And they put, you know, humans with all different sorts of other races of beings, and most of them were evil. And, you know, the humans had a hero that grew up and led the humans to victory, and peace reigned for a long time. And the god who bet on evil was upset about it, so he went down and destroyed the human god, which was Andronicus, and replaced him with an evil doppelganger. So the whole world became evil again. The other gods found out and came down and raised, you know, the fallen king as the Deathbat. So you play as the Deathbat to gain back your land, but everyone thinks that you're still alive and that you've turned evil, so you need to, you know, you go around in your skull and bones now, and you're trying to, you know, win back the people.
The goodwill of the people.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, it's, you know, typical good and evil.
But you guys are in this, though. I was laughing because you've done a tutorial, which was very helpful, by the way, and we'll explain that later on. But you had the Johnny Christ character, which I was laughing, like Johnny Christ is a hero that you can actually play.
Yeah, well, we did that because we realized there'd be a lot of people that, obviously, it's our, you know, it's our game, so we put ourselves in it. But there's a lot of people that aren't going to be able to play the game as is because there is a high difficulty level. It's,
uh-huh,
you know, a gamer's game. And so if you get one of the band members, then, you know, we have overpowered swords, and we can kind of help you get a hang of it before you get into the depths of the game. You know, the first few levels you should be able to kind of walk through if you have a band member, because our weapons are so powerful. And we did that because we realized, you know, a lot of our fans want to play the game, but they're not, you know, necessarily gamers. So it's one of those things where if you're a full-on gamer and you want to beat it the way it was meant to be played, don't use a band member. And if you are a fan and just want to kind of check out the world we've created, then use a band member and it'll help you out.
Is the Johnny Christ guy strong enough to lift his sword?
He is, but his sword is very short because he's a short character in the game. So, you know, and most people that throw magic at him, it goes right over his head, so he can't even be hit. So
he's actually one of the better players you can have.
Exactly.
That's when you were programming, like, you did you put like, hey, can you give the M Shadows character a little bit more muscles? Can you make him look a little more handsome?
Well, I definitely worked on my character more than I cared to work on the other guys.
Of course.
And, And my sword is the most powerful sword, but I figured since I was working on the game for so long that I deserved at least that.
Exactly. Johnny Christ, you want a more powerful sword? Make your own damn game.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be funny. It was when I had the Steel Panther guys on, we were laughing like, you guys should make individual T-shirts of each guy in the band. And at the end of the night, add up who sold the most, and then whoever sold the less, just make fun of them. You should have done that with your with the video game with Deathbat and see like, okay, you can choose Shadows or Gates or Zaki or Johnny Christ and see who's the last place character chosen, and then just make fun of them.
Dude, we can. Right now you can get individual characters, so we will see numbers.
Wow.
So it will be definitely. Yeah, and we also made shirts, individual band member shirts, because of the game. Like, there are band characters on shirts, and you can buy the whole package or whatever. But a lot of fans were requesting that, so we're like, hey, we'll do it. Like, you know, because there's forums that are just for the video game, and there's a lot of really passionate, awesome fans on there talking about the game, and they brought up the idea, like, hey, you should make shirts for all these characters. So we did.
Oh, that's great.
So I'll definitely call in and get the numbers back to you so we can make fun of whoever didn't sell the most.
Who's the lowest? Now, is Aaron in the game too?
Oh, yeah. Aaron's in the game.
All right. Well, so that's the thing. Like, he might get the least, but then again, he's the young, hot upstart. So he might.
Well, you know what, though? If someone loses to Aaron, that's even more telling to make fun of them.
Oh, exactly.
You know, the new guy beats you out. That's
Yeah, man. But it wouldn't be any fun unless it was Johnny Christ in last place. That's the only way it'd be
totally
any fun.
Because if it was me, Zach, or Brian, it would be real
bad. Gates wouldn't care, and Zachy wouldn't say anything anyways. So if it was Christ, then you could actually get some mileage out of it.
Exactly.
So to get the game, you just go into the App Store. That's what I did. I have an iPhone, so I guess you can do an iPhone on Android, on Google Play.
Yep, that's it, man. Easy as that. And then this week, it comes out on Steam for all the PC gamers.
Okay.
Anyone with a PC can play it on their computer. I think we're going to try to release it before Halloween.
Okay, and if you have the game, you're going to get the game, and it's a little bit difficult. You can also go online, and Shadows did about a 10-minute tutorial, and you kind of lead people through the ups and downs of the game, which I thought was a smart idea too.
Yeah, you know, like I said, there's a big, you know, learning curve for people that don't play games and people that do, and also just in terms of, you could be a gamer and not play games on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole other, like, difficult, you know, like, things like people want to move their thumb a lot more than you really have to, you know, like, the game's actually pretty intuitive once you get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it basically walks people through the game's tutorial, and it also walks people through the first level so they can get a hang of it. And so after that, I mean, you'll know what everything does. You'll know how the system works and the coin system. And so at that point, you watch the tutorial and you should be able to, you know, play the game.
And you can just find that on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Just type in, you know, Hail to the King tutorial. I'm sure it'll pop right up.
There you go, exactly. Hey, we were talking earlier this week that my new book just came out, and there's some great stories, and there's some great M. Shadow stories of all the ridiculous stuff we've been through over the years. but my favorite story is when Mike Portnoy, who's drummed for you on the Nightmare Tour, you guys came over to my house, and he basically almost killed you by running you over with a jet ski.
Yeah, well, he almost cut off my leg for sure.
And so, a lot of people are asking about that. Like, what? Is that real? Is that real? Now, I wrote about it from my point of view, but tell us the story from your point of view. And I'm just going to say it quickly. The Avenged guys came over to my house. We had a barbecue at my place. I live on a lake. I have a jet ski. And Matt was standing on the shoreline waiting for his turn. And Portnoy was coming in and was trying to do like a drive-by splashing, but couldn't find the brakes. There is no brakes on a jet ski, dumb Mike Portnoy. And he came so close, and I thought for sure, because I was cooking steak, and I looked away, and I heard this big bam. And when I turned around, I was convinced that you would be cut in half, that you would be like a torso on the ground and two legs sticking up in the air with like blood spurting out of it, like a video game. So
yeah.
Thankfully, nothing happened. But what happened on your from your way point of view there?
Well, if I remember correctly, you had two jet skis, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I was sitting on one on the shore. So one was just like kind of docked up on the shore, and
yeah.
I had my legs hanging over on it. And Portnoy, like you said, comes by to do the old splashing, and like your shore had some rocks and stuff on one.
Yes.
There's some rocks there. So I'm just sitting there minding my own business, and I see this guy coming at me with a crazed look in his eye. And I notice he can't, like, he's too far in now. He's committed too much to where he can't even turn away if he wanted to.
Right.
So, like, at the last second, I lift my legs up and I, like, kind of roll backwards, and he just smashes into the rock / you know, other jet ski.
Basically, where your legs were just between those,
yeah.
The two.
Oh, yeah. They were just between there. Like, my legs would have been completely crushed or, like, you know, taken off.
Right.
So I sat there in shock, and he's just laughing. Like, he's like, what did he say? He's saying, like, where are the brakes on these things, man? The brakes don't work or something. And we're like, are you kidding me? You're in the water on a jet ski, like, going,
there's
you know,
no,
40 there's, miles an hour.
Yeah. No brakes.
Like, there's no brakes. Yeah. So he, yeah. Like, luckily I saw him in the corner of my eye, and luckily I moved. I didn't sit there like an idiot and get my legs taken off, but.
Well, and the thing I remember too, like from jet skiing for a while, is that sometimes when you get caught in the wake, it's hard to turn, especially when you're going too fast. As a matter of fact, I actually crashed into the dock years and years before that, but it seemed he was able to turn at the last minute and then get caught as like a wave went down. It took him up so that when you moved your legs, it didn't push your jet ski forward. It just kind of, they just went down and came up. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It didn't blast you.
And also you gotta accelerate to turn on those things. Like,
yeah. Right.
As soon as you don't accelerate, like, he's probably looking for a break.
Yes.
You know, and at that point there was no acceleration, so you're just going to be going full speed straight into somebody because, you know, you have to, like, accelerate. It's almost counterintuitive.
Right.
Like, you're like, you know, like, you think, okay, I got to, like, let go of the acceleration, but really he should have been accelerating. He probably could have turned.
He could have turned last minute, yes.
Yeah, but since he took his hand off that and was looking for the ghost break. Yeah, basically pretty much took me out, dude. That was right before a show, too.
I know.
Like, I mean, well, whatever. My legs would have been gone.
Well,
so.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't have made
really, the show. Yeah, wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, so. I would have had to put on shades and a backwards hat and tried to be you for that one. I don't think you would have made it.
Totally, dude. You had my blessings from the hospital.
Yeah. The best thing of all, and the epilogue of the story was, it's like everyone's laughing, and you know. But meanwhile, like I said, I was so convinced I was going to turn around and see you just crumpled on the shore. And when you were fine, I was like, oh, thank God. And I think you were relieved, and everyone was kind of, and so you guys went to the show and we went to the show and watched it. And then a couple days later, that jet ski just kind of stayed parked on the shoreline. And a couple days later, I took it out into the lake, and about 2 feet into the water, it just sunk. Boom. So I pulled it out of the water. And I called my jet ski guy to come over, and I was like, he comes over to do maintenance and stuff, because, you know, I live right on that lake and I can't really take them out. And he comes over, and I thought maybe there was one of the sealants had gone, or there was some kind of a crack in it or something. And I go, so can you fix it? He goes, oh, no, you can't fix it. I said, why? Did a seal break? Or he goes, no, there's a hole in the bottom of it the size of a human head.
Oh, geez.
He said, this thing is done. So that was it.
Wow.
You know, but I would take that in a second than you getting messed up. But I was just laughing like that damn Portnoy for the rest of his life. I'm going to have that on him. He owes me a damn jet ski.
No, he does owe you a jet ski. You know, what's crazy though. It's like one of those things that was so close that it, like, you're right. Like,
yes.
We'd be talking about this and it could not be funny at all.
No, exactly.
It's so close that it's actually funny because it was so scary.
Yeah. And I remember my dad used to say when I was a kid, and if I, you know, slid on the ice into a telephone pole one time, and he's like, well, you know, you didn't get hurt. It's only a piece of metal. And that's all I was thinking. It's just a piece of metal. I'm just glad you didn't get hurt. But so close, like you said, man, and like, oh, scary moment that makes for a funny story that could have made for a really sad one, too.
Yep, totally. Oh.
Thanks
for bringing that up.
Yeah, good. Good story. Good times. So I'm sure people will ask you about it if they read my book, because you're all over it. There's a lot of great stories about us in there. But Hail to the King, the album, recently went gold, which was, we've been talking, might as well be triple platinum in this day and age. That's a huge accomplishment. The Hail to the King tour, great shows all across the world. I know you're kind of a little bit of a break right now. What's the plan? Are you doing any more shows for Hail to the King?
Yeah, well, we just announced we're doing January. We're doing, you know, all Southeast Asia and
mm-hmm.
between between us girls. We're playing China as well.
Wow.
But we can't announce that until we get the government approval, which it looks good.
That's great.
But we got 3 dates in China, so that will be tacked on to, you know, Malaysia's and the Bangkok's and the Jakarta's, which we just announced yesterday. And I mean, those fans are so excited. So we're excited to go there.
That's great. That's great. And then after that, start thinking about maybe possibly doing a new record?
Yeah, you know, we have, I text you, a while ago and said we got some big things on the horizon, and we do.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing I can talk about, but definitely some really cool things. I think by, next September, people will be hearing about some cool stuff, but we're going to start writing in the summer.
That's great.
Maybe do a couple things before then, but nothing in terms of, like, new music. So,
well,
next summer we'll start writing.
You got a lot of stuff going on. I know you've got an addition to the family, which is great. It's good that you got some home time. But more importantly, for right now on a professional level, Hail to the King, Deathbat. It's one of the coolest games you'll play. I'm not even a gamer, and I enjoy watching my son play it. So at least you get that. Maybe I'll try and play the Johnny Christ character one of these days and see if I can get involved in it.
Sure, dude. That's your character.
Great to talk to you, man, and great to touch base. And hopefully I'll get a chance to come in your neck of the woods, and we can go hang out at the second floor again.
You too, man. And then, hey, congrats on the book, dude.
Thanks, dude. Well, like I said, awesome. When you get a chance to read it, you're all over it. So it might sound like I got
I'll probably gonna get it today, and it takes me 2 days to read your books. I totally love them, dude.
Thanks, man. Stuff. It might sound like I have a man crush on you, and it's because I do.
I was gonna say. No worries, dude. I can't believe you let that out, but okay.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, dude. Have a good one, man.
Thanks, later. Dude. Bye.
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
Talk is Jericho.
We've had a couple drinks before we came to do this. In the Marriott Hotel, the TV hotel, which means this is where the office stays.
Yep.
And we never really want to stay where the TV office guys stay. Because it's just one of those things, like, the less people know what you're doing, the better it is.
Less people around, less people seeing, especially having a couple drinks.
Yeah.
You don't want an audience. You just want to be with your friends, have a good time.
But it wasn't bad tonight. We're here with Dolph Ziggler and Doc Amen.
Doc Amen.
D-O-K-K and Doc and Trainer.
That's what it says on the business card. So.
Now we're
yes, that's correct.
That is correct. So we're here because you guys travel together, and we thought it'd be fun to have
as
Doc
friends.
Sit in on the official Dolph Ziggler podcast with special guest Doc and Amen.
Absolutely.
So how did you guys start riding together?
That's a great question. Doc, do you know?
I think there was a Justin Roberts tie-in because me and Justin Roberts and I are
we both are
out of Phoenix, and once in a while we're on the same side, and I'll hop in with him, and he loves having a couple people in his car to drive around and boss around or whatever his deal
right.
is, and Doc also was riding with Roberts here and there, so every once in a while we have two different loops going on. Somebody goes with somebody. Somebody goes the other way. The kid will go with him, who's Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of split up cars or figure it out. Used to be Miz not on the mix, but Monday Night Miz is not the
– Miz is getting kind of taken out of the mix here now.
He's very – very into believing in his character 24/7, which is fantastic for him and not so much for everybody else.
Done with the Hollywood Miz.
Yes.
He's hard to hang out with sometimes, yeah, isn't he?
That was a good friend of mine who's very hard to hang out with these days.
Now tell us about the game that you guys play in the car when you guys are traveling together.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think we started playing this a couple months ago, and you know, when I grew up and went to high school, I was very much into sort of the hard rock and hair metal, and played actually in bands through high school and part of college.
Do you see Doc's band picture?
Yeah, he's got awesome. The I giant. Doc's got a big axe at home that he rocks on occasion.
He's got the big giant raspberry afro too, like the redhead afro thing.
Yeah,
like,
well,
like
you know, that was Dave the style Mustaine. Back then. And,
yeah. So Danny Bonaduce / Mustaine.
So you were totally into rock and roll and heavy metal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you and I have always talked about that. Yeah. We kind of have the same. Musical tastes and kind of come from the you know the same musical genre. Right. So we kind of invented this game to pass the time, and it's funny because it actually does make the 300-mile drives fly by really fast. We'll get to a destination and be like, oh, it's done already. We're here.
So what's the game?
So what we decided to do is that I like to listen to Hair Nation, and yes. I think Dolph likes to listen
huge
to
Hair Nation fan.
Hair Nation as well too. So we came up with a game, and
by the way, no one else in that car enjoys the Hair Nation game or knows anything to pick besides, maybe Dr. Feelgood or a Guns N' Roses song. That's Justin Roberts and the kid.
The kid's in this too? Zach Ryder?
Once in a while, he doesn't know anything. He goes, Girls, Girls, Girls by Motley Crue.
Okay, you're jumping ahead though. We don't know what the game is though.
Yeah,
so the game is sort of predicated on the theory that...
the smartest guy
this
ever.
This is the doctor language stuff. No, it's predicated on the theory that XM radio sort of plays the same either bands or songs over and over again for Hair Nation. So as a result of that, we sort of make a game out of trying to predict the next song that they're going to play. And in doing so, we'll be listening to a song, and then everybody will sort of have their pick of the next song that's going
to
play.
It's not like you're hearing a note and guessing. You're trying to like be Nostradamus. And
The
next song is going to be Skid Row, and then you wait a couple seconds, and the next song happens to be...
But you go. I'd like to hear... I hope it's... Primal Scream, Motley Crue. Okay, what do you got? Anything?
18 Alive, Skid Row.
Yeah. Van Halen's not on there. You need to know that right away.
Van Halen's not played on Hair Nation?
But you know who is? David Lee Roth on occasion.
Wow. Yeah. So they don't play Van Halen on Hair Nation?
No Van Halen. That's it. And it's a couple other bands that are like, you're not sure. Judas Priest, never. Like, they're not a hair band. But there's a couple bands that are on the gray area. They are not part of this game.
So how often do you actually get the right answer?
Well, it's not. By the way, we played for a whole weekend. Like, hey, guys, what do you think the point system was? We did, if you get it right, the band, you get 1 point. If you get the band and the song, which is a huge point. Pop in the car, like, wow. Holy
yeah.
crap.
Yeah. You just predicted, you know, the date that the world is going to
end. Which I believe my first double pointer was, I don't know, Primal Scream, Motley Crue, whatever. And it's just like, scream and chat. And it's like, oh.
No, it's like that bass line.
Wait a minute. Because you forget. Because
how does it go?
You're 100 miles in, and you're like, wait, what did I say? Did I say Bon Jovi? No, I think, I said this. And everyone goes, oh, right. And then you're allowed to turn up as loud as you can. And everyone rocks out to it. Yeah.
Right.
But you get 2 points for naming both, which is it's happened maybe 4 times in.
So you got it with Primal Scream, Motley Crue.
That was my first one.
Did you ever get it, Doc?
Yeah, I got a couple. Doc and Breaking the Chains.
Doc and Ashley.
Yeah, I called Doc and Breaking the Chains once. He got 2 points for that.
But we played for this whole weekend. And like, hey, what do you think our points are? Like, I don't know, 30 to 28, 27. I was like, it was 6-4
after 5 hours.
5 hours on 3 different days. Like, you started to get your top bands. You get a lot of Guns N' Roses, a lot of Motley Crue, a lot of Poison. Yeah. So that's a good safe bet, but you still, it's hard to get some points. Cinderella. A lot of Shake Me.
They play that all the time. It's like they only have one song. It's funny because you think of those cool games. That was a good one. The other one would be like, you'd put on, let's say me and Dean and Brian Hildebrand and Eddie used to play, but Eddie was bad at it. But you put on the 70s channel.
Oh, God.
And then the first 2 or 3 notes or 4 notes or 10 notes, you would have to try and guess what it was. Oh, that's the Bee Gees' Tragedy. And so the song was playing, and this was before they would actually show what the name
that's
was on the radio.
That's very helpful because a lot of times we don't get it.
And then the other one we used to do is you'd play band names. So give me a band name.
Rat.
Okay, so then I have to start a band with T.
There's
so
two T's in
Tesla, that. And then you'd have
oh,
to.
Oh no, A.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. There's so many A's.
Armageddon, it's a song. But A. Is Anthrax okay?
Yeah, that's right. Right. But then.
I was trying to limit myself to Hair Nation
for
a second. But
here's the thing. Now Doc would have to start a band with X.
So, yeah, I kind of screws the guy. Yeah,
there's a band called, I think a band called like Xenophobia or something or some whatever.
Probably.
That'd be the only X that you
it's
get.
It's like Scrabble. Can we check?
See, now you can Google it. Back then you couldn't Google it,
right? Google it. Exactly. Exactly. Actually, there was a band just called X.
Oh, I think
which then passes X on to me. Yeah. Oh, so then I would say X Japan, and then it's N to you. Oh, okay. So you know you get wrong, but you can also do that with wrestlers as well. Which
yeah,
was
that's
a cool.
Wrestler name game.
Yeah,
brother.
So I mean you're on the road and you try and figure the names. So
modern
age. You were just on the road. You're a big Motley Crue fan. We actually saw
huge
Motley
fan.
Crue at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yes.
Kind of together.
Yeah.
We were both there.
We were both there. 100 yards apart doing loops. Like if it was the day of no cell phones, we never would have met.
Yeah,
even if we held David Lee Roth's giant flag from the Van Halen shows, we wouldn't have found each other.
I'll meet you at 8. You're like, where are you? Where are you?
You're like, I'm at a t-shirt stand. I'm
you're like,
okay.
Which one? The t-shirt stand in front of A. I'm in front of A. No, I'm in front of A. Double A. Well, I'm in front of A. But you got to see the crew on their farewell tour.
Farewell tour.
And
all
you had
bad things must come to an end, brother.
Love it. Which is funny because that was the name of the new song, which they played like the first three nights.
You said they got it a couple nights and said it wasn't working out.
But here's something that people don't understand or they don't realize or don't think about is that on the road so much that when you finally had a couple days off, you had to take a road trip.
Yeah, it was this huge, like usually after WrestleMania, we get 5 days off and everyone gets to chill out and we're all done or after a SummerSlam. And we didn't have it this time. We went right into a couple of shows. And then I was like, finally, we have this weekend off. And I saw it's my chance to see Crew at Jones Beach, where it happens to be, you know, 2 minutes from Broski's house, which is Zach Ryder,
house,
the kid. And I said, you know what? Screw it. Sitting at home for 48 hours would have tired me out anyway. So I did a 96-hour spring break in New York. And we ended up going to see them. I can never remember the...
PNC?
Second night.
PNC.
It's like Elmore, New Jersey.
Yeah, it's the PNC Arts, PNC Bank Arts Auditorium.
So we saw them Friday night in Jones Beach, had fun, and then said, damn it, you know what? We got one more day here. Let's do it. We figured out the train system to take an hour train here to an hour train here to a school bus that picked us up off of an exit at like the Manawakwa something
yeah,
exit.
Yeah, Manapisawaka.
A school bus. Drove us 10 minutes to the venue with dudes, and we just followed some guys who looked like Mick Mars from Far Away with the top hats and the fans were like, we'll follow these guys.
they
got on
going.
A school bus like, hey, can we just go? Yeah, PNC Bay Arena. It was worth it. Like the last couple years, me, Brad Attitude, Katie, a friend of mine, and finally Brad's girlfriend got to come with us. A couple years, we've just been seeing Crew. We saw them in Vegas, and it's the one thing I do that's not sitting at home and relaxing.
What did Ryder think of the Crew?
Ryder ended up having a good time because he kept making this joke going, girls, 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 like
for every song,
air playing the guitar because he didn't know anything. And he ended up because he's got MFOTY,
which is, oh, gotcha.
He's got that on his phone and like, and girls and like,
so he's got a couple,
Kickstart My Heart.
Yeah, he's got a couple
and
rock songs.
And he ended
songs.
Up I just put my phone in the room as we're getting ready to go to TVs, and he got accustomed to a couple of their songs. So he had a good time.
Because he is a boy band aficionado.
Yes, he's a big boy band. That's the last time I went to Jones Beach. He saw New Kids on the Block.
Wow.
He said they jumped into the water and swam to a boat and drove off. I go, it's not going to be the same, so you know. Yeah. Everyone there is going to look like my mom in a cutoff t-shirt with a lot of Aquanet in her hair. So just relax.
This may explain why he's so bad at the heavy metal hair game,
yes.
You know?
The heavy metal hair game. That's
that we play in the car,
They just throw out,
Now, I remember, I just remember this right now, that you and me went and saw Metallica in Madison Square Garden.
Whoa.
We did. I think we had just come back from an overseas tour.
We had just come back
from
overseas. We landed that afternoon at, 4 p.m., and Metallica was at the Garden. And the best thing about this was that WWE was at the Garden the next night.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, so it was easy.
So it just happened to work out.
It's so easy.
So
it's
Doc
hard to get an MSG
went,
when you work there, by the way.
Yeah, right. And we knew Lars. I knew Lars and his assistant hooked us up with tickets, which we were sitting kind of up in the stands with Mike Portnoy.
Right, your buddy
and
from
then,
Dream Theater.
From Dream Theater. And then Lars has said these tickets aren't good enough. Come down and stand side of the stage, jeez, like right by the stage. And before that, we got to go backstage where, you know, where Vince's office is in the garden.
Yeah.
That's where Lars's kind of party room was. And, you know, we kind of, I remember I popped my head in there and Lars was like, oh, come on, Chris, come in. So we all went and hung out.
Right.
And Doc was just standing the whole time. Just like,
it's like deer in the headlights.
Because Metallica was one of your
bands. Hey, you remember that one time
on
Enter Sandman when you played the drum, like the Chris Farley show, but with Doc?
You were awesome.
That was awesome, right? You remember that? Remember Enter Sandman?
But that was a blast though, man. I remember we were right by the stage and Lars kept coming off the stage to talk to Mike Portnoy, like how was my drumming on that song? Like,
no way.
They played Dyer's Eve super fast. How did I do? Was it okay? And talk the whole time. It was a good night though, man.
Yeah,
right?
It was great. I had a ton of fun and getting to not only see Metallica, which I've seen before, but to be able to just
no big deal.
Just to hang out with them and see them, you know, up close and James and. Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Fun, right? Well, that's the thing when you get a chance to do stuff like that because we're on the road so much. But another good thing is when we're on the road and having fun at work. And I think over the last few months, things have been going really good for you, Dolph.
Yeah,
you're Intercontinental Champion.
Yep. Big deal for me.
You have a great connection with the crowd, and you have for, I don't know, what's it been, 2-3 years maybe?
Yeah, we're a solid couple of years of about maybe a year before. Maybe 6 months to a year before getting that Money in the Bank contract.
Right.
It was no matter what I did, it was almost the cool heel because I don't know, cause good. I don't know. They appreciate the work,
right?
And they appreciate me killing myself at every possible chance for them to where no matter what I did, bad guy, good guy stuff, that the crowd was starting to kind of get behind
people
me.
People always respect because you make everything look great. You know what I mean? It's just one of your skills as a performer, which, I mean, it kind of, you know, the business goes in ups and downs, but when you have that extra love from the crowd, no matter what it is you're doing, you mentioned that Money in the Bank. That was insane.
Yeah.
You won the Money in the Bank.
Gosh.
And then it was the night after WrestleMania, right?
Mm-hmm. But the cool thing for me was I did at WrestleMania, I have a match, it's not even important, but the cool thing was the world title match a couple matches later, 71 or 78,000 people throughout that entire match were just chanting for me.
Wow.
And so I stood by a gorilla with the briefcase like, hey, I don't, you know.
Got to call an audible,
who
knows, Vince?
You know, you never know. And I'm just in case, like, where's Ziggler, you know? And
whose match was that?
It was Del Rio and Swagger.
Oh,
and
wow.
Those guys have been going at it for a while back and forth, and I've tried and cash in 20 million times and had taken 19,999 broke kicks trying to cash in
from Sheamus,
random things. And it was just they wanted it, and the cool thing was they didn't just want it because, like, oh, cool, someone will cash it in. As much as a jerk as I am to a lot of people, the crowds change everything that I do every Monday Night Raw, whether 30 seconds or 3 segments.
Mm-hmm.
They make my matches that much better. By 2 seconds in, we tie up, somebody kicks me in the stomach, and everybody's like, we want Ziggler or something. It's the coolest thing in the world, and it's not a lot of people have that. Guys who win every night don't always have that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really cool and surreal for
me.
It
does make a difference, too, because you could have the perfect match.
No.
Everything goes perfect and everything's great. And if the crowd is dead, it sucks.
It sucks. You go back and you're like, damn it, that sucked. Why didn't this work? Why didn't this work?
You could have a match where you screw up high spots and you screw up this and screw up that. And if the crowd's going nuts, you come back and go,
wow,
you know what? That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Something funny came. Me and Wade Barrett had a match right before he got hurt, a couple days or a couple weeks before.
You're talking about this last time when he got hurt?
Yes, like very recently. And it was just a great match. We had a long time. We told a story. We had fun. And they were so hot that I went, this match is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so hot. I think I went on Twitter the next day and said, the WWE Universe takes a good match and makes it great, and takes a great match and makes it unreal for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty audibly it was caught. We had Rod as the ref even, and it took something. And I just went, down into a double down where we both had hit each other and dropped. And I just went, damn, they're hot tonight. And I watched it back on my TV at home. And I just hear, damn, that's hot. They're hot tonight. And I was like, oh, no, people can hear me saying that. But it was like they changed every that crowd, any crowd can take an awesome match and go, this was the greatest thing we've ever seen just by being hot. And you get spoiled because you don't always get that.
That's right.
But sometimes you got to earn it, and sometimes you get it, but you take advantage and make the most of it.
And there's some crowds that no matter what you do, you just can't get that.
Can't get them.
And other ones, like even tonight, you were here in Lincoln, Nebraska, they were a great crowd all night long.
All night long.
Which on SmackDown,
you get a long day.
It's hard.
People
yeah.
sitting in their chairs.
Main event taping, yep. you know. But tell us a little bit more about that night with Del Rio, because that reaction that you got, there's two things I remember about the night after WrestleMania, whatever number it was, 29, I guess. And Fandango was the most popular guy
yeah.
in the building.
Yep.
And you were the other most popular guy in the building. yeah. And I'm taking full credit for yeah. Fandango being popular.
Obviously.
But then you get, I mean, was Del Rio against
Swagger again. And then this time Del Rio pulls off another win. But his boot is off and his ankle has been through so much pain, and I and a couple of episodes of Archer on my TV have the diamond next to them. Means they are not to be erased. So it's this. I see him holding his ankle, and my music hits, and I was ready. I'm like, okay, here we go. And when I come through the ring, I just remember watching Triple H's DVD a long time ago when he came back from his torn quad and came back, and this, I think it was MSG, this crazy noise erupted through, and I went, I got shivers on my back, and I'm not him. And I'm just coming out, go, okay, here we go, this is going to be good. And I hear this reaction that I've never heard in my life ever, of just everyone not just being all relieved at the same time, but like, yeah, somebody's doing something that's not supposed to happen right now. And I was all business going down, but I could feel the tiny peach fuzz hairs on my shoulders standing up. I was like, whoa, holy cow. And to fully appreciate, I had to watch it back. But coming down there, I go, this is amazing. And in classic Ziggler form, there's no cash in. Hey, what's up? Kick him in the face and beat him. I almost lose three times to where everyone's like, of course he's going to lose. Yeah, he loses every night. Like, and it was such – there was a mini match that was every false.
It was so well done.
Something. And it was – I loved that. That is like, oh, yeah, he's getting screwed. Oh, no, he's going to get it. No, of course he's getting screwed. Oh, my God, he got it. And that's where everyone, like, blew the roof off, and I've never heard anything like that in my entire life.
And that's kind of what wrestling's all
special
about.
Special
like,
moment for every, me ever.
Every match we have is a slot machine. You pull the big handle, and you get one banana, and the rest is stars. And then you get two bananas, and once in a while, all the fruit lines up, and it's a jackpot. Because they sniffed it, I remember.
Yeah.
Before you even came out, as soon as Del Rio was down and he was
down
massaging his ankle.
It's kind of going on a little bit. And, like,
And he was a baby face at the time, right?
He's the good guy. I'm the bad guy. And they go, yes! Yeah, he's going to take advantage of this good guy.
And there you are, the world champion.
Yes.
Because you had won the world champion once before, but kind of like for 5 minutes or some kind of technicality BS thing, right?
But even though that was... That hurt my feelings because I thought, down the line in 20 years, I'm going to have this thing 10 times. And I was just – at the time, I went, oh, I got awarded the title because Edge speared me. It takes away from this awesome match that me and Adam had, that he led the whole entire way. It was at the Royal Rumble, maybe 2011. We opened the show 20 minutes, and after 6 minutes in – I got to see it on YouTube. Everyone's out of their seats every step of the way. And it was so cool to be like, oh, this guy, you know, he's going to hang around with Adam or Edge, and Edge is going to win. And this, I got to ride with Edge for a couple months. He was a mentor of mine. And eventually got to have this awesome match where, of course, he led the way, but I held my own out there, and it was one of my favorite matches. He still pulls off the win. But I get awarded the title.
Why did you get awarded the title?
Vicky Guerrero, the general manager at the time, had like said the spear was illegal or something. And
he had jilted her at the altar or something.
Yeah,
dating her or whatever.
It was the old days where I think Vicky had taken a couple spears at some point. but before I was around. But
back in the good old days when you could beat up women,
there was no rules.
No, I mean that was the thing. It was back in the days.
Everybody was up for grabs.
I put every girl on the roster in the Walls of Jericho.
Yeah,
at the time.
I was saying, it was like a cool thing,
including Linda McMahon. I think one night.
Really?
How do you take that, Chris? You know, whatever it was, but yeah,
you'll see, brother.
Tuck your chin. So you were awarded the title, and it was kind of, and you had to give it back.
No.
Oh, you lost it.
We do this awesome 30-minute match. I get awarded the title. They strap it around my waist. Said, hey, brother, this doesn't count. But maybe Teddy Long or somebody. Edge gets his rematch right now or something. And 5 or 6 minutes later, he was back to be the champ.
So you're a champ with an asterisk.
Yeah.
And that happened to me, too. I beat Triple H for the title in State College.
I remember that. The quick count.
Quick count.
As a fan of yours... not broski fan of yours during my birthday cake, but just a fan of wrestling and going, yeah, he got him. Yes. He got the bad guy. We stuck it to him. Like opening Seg of Raw or something. I remember that. I don't remember a lot of things. And I thought that was so cool. And then, I'm not an internet following person at the time. Didn't know the rules. Didn't know what's going on. I didn't see the fast count coming back and taking it back. I was just like, yeah, the good guys got one. Yeah, that's great. And then later.
We had the commercial break, and then when it was done, they stripped me of the title. But I remember asking Vince, I was like, would I really just give my title back? He goes, it's okay. You'll have it plenty more times after this. And I kind of held on, like really? Because I wasn't really not that big time then.
Right.
You know, and so when you got that, did you talk to Vince at all? Did he say anything to you? Here's what we're going to do? Or
that day, I was like, oh, cool. I had this cool match. Edge beat me, but the crowd kind of, and halfway through that match, they went from let's go Edge to let's go Edge, let's go Ziggler. And I was like, I got some respect, whatever. That's cool. And then I found out the next day, like, oh, yeah, you're getting more of the title. I was like, okay. Cool. Yeah. I'm 2 years in. That's cool. Or 3 years, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, yeah, you guys are going to have a rematch. And I go, oh, okay. That's fine, But I go, watch the show tonight. And when I get awarded the title, take a lot of pictures off the TV, Dad, if you don't mind, with your flip phone or whatever. And it's just like, this will be cool. If I never have anything again, that title was around my waist for 3 minutes. And I took some pictures with it. And I did a bunch of push-ups before I went out, so I look good.
That's what I said. I remember I was in the mirror in between the commercial break looking at it.
Like,
I said, if the world ends right now,
I
will be the world champion.
Like,
so that's all right. That's not bad, you know?
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
I'm here with Dolph Ziggler and Doc Amen. Dolph, what's your relationship with Vince? I mean, do you talk to him quite a bit? Is he getting better as you are here longer?
It's slowly getting better just because you have so many ups and downs as a WWE superstar. But then you say hi, and it's you need to build the relationship. And everyone tells you. And then guys, Attitude Era guys who are back, like, hey, listen, you gotta have this relationship. Because a lot of people know is like, oh, you do stand-up, you do improv, you do all this cool stuff. Vince only knows that you're good at putting on good matches.
Mm-hmm.
You take
good bumps.
You got to let him know, you know? And it's like, all right. So it's tricky at first because it's scary to go, hey, what's going on? I'm just here to let you know how good I am, and you know? And it's slowly but surely getting better every day.
Which is important,
Yeah, and it really is.
Absolutely.
Even if you're the best wrestler, you need to go talk to him and let him know what's going on with
you. He's an intimidating guy.
Yeah.
How about you, Doc? What's your relationship with Vince? I mean, you've been with the company for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years
now? A little over 6 years now.
And you're one of the hardest working men in the company, too. We make jokes about it, but you work 5-6 days a week. I mean, it seems that way.
It's a lot of travel. I mean, I really, truly love what I do. You know, I think the hardest part of the job, people always ask me is, you know, what's the hardest part of the job? And it's not so much the medical stuff. It really is the travel.
Yeah. And,
I mean, I empathize with, you know, all of you guys that have to do the travel as well, too. I mean, fortunately, I just have to, you know, sit ringside and, you know, collect your jacket or ring a bell.
Collect your jacket.
Every time I give him my jacket, I say, there's 18 years of medical school. Take my jacket.
Take my jacket.
Yeah, this is what I'm doing.
By the way, 5-6 years in, no titles?
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Disappointing. Well, yeah, I mean, doctor.
Yeah, doc-inter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so my my relationship, though, with Vince is has been great. I met him the first day I started, and I think I remember the first time, you know, just introducing himself and just being very hospitable and welcome. You know, it's great to have you here. So it's, you know, it's been a great relationship. And I think that, like any relationship, as time goes on, you develop trust in one another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been very respectful of any medical decisions we as a medical staff make, myself, as well as the other members of the medical staff. So we've, you know, there's that give and take, and I think he understands and realizes that there are things that we can work around, and there's things mm-hmm. that we just absolutely can't
You're
put a superstar
about if
at
somebody's
risk.
Hurt, yeah, gotta, if somebody's hurt, he has to be off, or he needs to get an x-ray, or right. just tape him up and put him out there.
Right, and so, you know, Vince is always like, you know, you guys make the call, and whatever you, you know, whatever you say goes, and, you know, quite honestly, I've probably had more difficult time trying to negotiate with high school football coaches that I've worked with in terms of, you know, putting a freshman back in a game, you know.
Because they're very adamant now, if the guy's not ready, he's not allowed to go back in the ring.
Right, absolutely. And that goes not only just for concussions, but, you know, any injury that
right.
that goes. I mean, we, you know, our number one priority in the medical staff is to make sure that we're allowing the superstars to participate when they're healthy and only when they're ready. You know, we don't risk the health of a superstar just, you know, for the sake of doing something for the show.
Which is so opposite the way things used to be, you know?
Yeah, and that's the stories I hear from everybody. You know, it's so different, you know?
Before they brought you in, as a matter of fact, we never had a team doctor. We had Chris, the trainer, who would, you know, give you tape and, you know, if you needed some kind of ultrasound or ice or whatever.
Or an Advil.
Or an Advil. Or blue gum, which he keeps for me.
A lot of gum.
But, you know, I remember I went through this phase with Van Damme. God bless him. Nobody's put more stitches in my head than Rob Van Dam has. And 3 weeks in a row, I got cut open from kicks and this. And I have to go sit in the emergency room in Louisville, Kentucky at 4 a.m. with the type of people that are in the emergency room at 4 a.m. And I remember I went to Vince and said, Vince, we need just a multi-billion-dollar company, whatever it is. And I got to go sit in the emergency room to get stitches till 4 a.m. We need a doctor. So he was hiring local doctors for a while and then finally brought you in as our actual team doctor, which seems so stupid that we didn't have one for so long.
Although I guess there were physicians before. There was a physician on staff prior to me being there that was there for TV tapings but not for live
not
events.
For live
Wasn't
events.
That kind of how it worked? Or?
And yeah. And
sometimes
these were always
there was a local
events.
Doctor. But yeah, once They're in a real... while. But like some, it's a huge deal, I think. We joke around with doctors. We're our buddies with them.
Right.
But it's the thing is... Like if you have a local doctor and he doesn't know you from the last four years, couple months, whatever, he's like, oh yeah, you got to go to the, we got to take you to the hospital or something. He's
yes.
Like, no, I know his history. Here's what we got to do. Like that's a big deal. For
sure
us.
It is. Knows our history and knows how the business works.
Right.
Right.
You know, I remember I went and saw a doctor back in Calgary, like in 95 and he said, he goes, how much time do I have to get you ready? You know, I got 3 weeks for my next tour. I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to tell you how much time you need.
You're right.
I'm going to ask you how much time do I have?
Yeah.
I got 3 weeks. Well, this is what I want to do. Like, you know how the business works,
right.
You know,
right.
And how things are. Talking about how things used to be in the old days, how did you come into the WWE, Dolph? Because, I mean, you've been through this company within a few different incarnations.
Yeah.
One which I completely forgot until I had Chavo on my show.
Oh, no.
Which we'll talk. We got to mention it.
Yes.
The Chavo's caddy,
yeah,
which is great.
I mean,
Kerwin White's caddy, shall we say.
Yes.
Was that your first time? Was that your first thing here?
Yeah, first thing was a lot of people think it was a Spirit Squad, but it was actually with Chavo for a little bit. And like I said, my whole life, I had been caddying at courses, Bushwood, and like God, I was like, I played every sport there is. I've watched wrestling since I was 5 years old. I wrestled from 5 through college, broke records, and I go, I can't wait to be this next Kurt Angle or whatever the deal is. And we got this great idea. You come in. Chavo's playing a character that's not even Chavo anymore. He's this snooty rich guy, and you're
snooty
gonna be
rich white guy.
White guy, and you're gonna be his caddy. And I go, oh. Okay, I guess that makes sense, you know, and the cool thing was having an amateur background, a couple people immediately were cool with me that you didn't know that you had to kind of earn their respect. Something along the lines of a Chavo or Eddie or Benoit or anybody.
And Jerry Briscoe. Like yeah. Those guys were always really.
And because of Briscoe.
Jim Ross.
Yeah, I just got to.
Did Jerry sign you?
Because of Jerry Briscoe, who was college teammates at Oklahoma State in the 60s with my wrestling coach from high school, which was St. Ed's. And wow. They were we were national champs multiple times, and I was okay. But the teams were amazing. We had a Gray Maynard went on to the MMA at UFC. We had Andy Robot go on to be Olympian for the U.S. We had all these awesome guys go on to coach at Michigan and all this stuff. And I was okay. I was like fifth in the state, but I was mm-hmm. good. And when I got to college, I kind of got a little bit better and ended up breaking records and becoming the all-time winningest wrestler at Kent State. No big deal. And
what weight class?
165 all okay. 4 years. And I'm pretty sure before they changed the weights, that was also Scott Steiner's weight class.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Before they switched it, because he was like 173 a year or something. But it was like
Scott
they switched
did some
him.
Big training when he came yeah, into business.
Yeah.
So you're the most winningest wrestler.
I was when I graduated.
From your state.
Kent State, which is Division One.
Wow, man. That's pretty impressive.
But my motivation wasn't winning matches. My motivation was like, if I can break records here, Kurt Angle had a gold medal. Maybe I can get my foot in the door. Maybe I'll get a
no
tryout.
Kidding.
Yeah.
That was your
and
mindset.
Like one of my coaches from high school said, oh, just keep eating, do as good as you can, get as big as you can, and maybe I can. And when they come to town in Cleveland, we'll get tickets, and maybe I can get you a handshake and say hi or something. And I was very lucky to get a handshake and say hi and get a tryout. Which, wow. By the way, didn't go well. It went okay.
Where was your tryout?
At Ohio Valley Wrestling. And
so you actually you didn't have your tryout like in a big WWE thing. You just went to the actual school at the time.
Once in a while at the school, they would send in one or two guys just to go in with the stuff. And me and Bobby Lashley showed up together from different cities. And I was looking for a guy, by the way. If you hear the name Bobby Lashley, not knowing him now, you're like, oh, who's this guy going to be? Some
Lashley
nerd
sounds
from
like,
Idaho
yeah,
or something.
Some transvestite or
and
something.
And by the way, yeah, everyone's standing around. I look in and I see... This can't be the guy, right? I go, hey, man, you're not Bobby Lashley, right? He goes, yeah. I go, okay, we're both on this track. Like, giant
like,
made out of granite. I had just finished wrestling 165 for Kent 4 weeks earlier, so I was maybe 175. And he was this giant guy, and I was like, we ended up being good friends, but they ended up offering... I guess I would have picked him also. They offered him a job and said, hey, maybe, 6 months from now, whatever, if you can get a little bit bigger, get some training under your belt, come back. So long story short, I was doing powdered milk mixed with 2% milk every 2 hours.
What does that do?
I don't know. I was hoping to gain a couple pounds, and it was just having my stomach stick out. So technically I was 6 pounds heavier, but my stomach was just distended the entire way. And I lied and said I had gotten some wrestling training and came back and got a 2-week trial just as Lance Storm had taken over for OVW at that point instead of Rip Rogers at the time. And I was
kind of a better step up.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of Lance, and I went, whoa, this guy's the new teacher. And so I was a huge ECW on my black and white screen only non-cable TV in my room. And Friday and Saturday nights they would do ECW the same show, but I'd watch it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I was ready. I had read Mick Foley's book where he threw himself over the hood of a car onto a lawn a couple times to get his back ready. So I had 20 half golf balls in my back. I thought I had a tolerance.
Why were you falling on half golf balls?
Jumping muscles coming out of my back.
Gotcha.
From swollen from falling. And I'd throw myself over the hood of the car to the floor a couple times. I'd wrestled in my high school gym on those half-inch mats taking bumps just to be ready. I go, every time I hit the ground, I'm going to snap up and blow these guys out of the water, whoever I got. And I had there was like an XFL player and Big John Studd's son, who was a hockey player somewhere, I think.
And what year is this, about 02, 03?
This is 04.
Okay.
And so we all had the tryout, and every time we did something, I was kind of picking it up a little bit quicker because I don't know if those guys had been fans their whole lives. I was, so I was kind of taking a bump. We're all kind of falling down about get up fast, and and I was a huge Lance Storm fan. So by the time at the end of the drills, he was using me as like the example.
Yeah, he would love you,
and like so it was really cool. I go, I got a good feeling about this, and we just kept waiting and waiting to hear, and they said, one more week. And I was talking to these guys back and forth, like, you hear anything? No, nothing. And the cool thing was Dr. Tom, mm-hmm. who was the in-between at
Dr.
the time.
Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Pritchard. Finally, I get a hold. And they say, hey, we're going through this change. We're a different management. Whatever. I'm like, oh, is this what they say when they're not signing somebody? And meanwhile, I was telling myself, okay, if they just say it's okay for me to come down, I'll pay for my school. I'll do whatever. And so Dr. Tom goes, yeah, finally, we get a hold of everybody 6 weeks later, whatever. Hey, listen, how old are you? I go, oh, I'm 23 or 24 or something. Oh, I thought you were 26. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and sign you to this. And
why
this.
Was 26?
He thought I was older or something. And,
why would that be a...
I don't know if it was just like a joke. Or like, oh, sorry. Maybe if you were older. Yeah, but it was just like this. It was, could have just been Dr. Tommy going... Because he kind of does that a lot. Yeah, yeah. But it was just like, oh, I'm too young? Damn it. I was like, what? He goes, we're going to go ahead and sign you. We're going to do this and this. I go, oh, what? And I just cover the phone and it was just like, what? Yeah, that sounds okay. I'm okay with this. Like Wayne's World when they're checking this contract. Yeah, I like what you've done here. This is nice. Yeah. And I was just like, whoa, holy cow, I'm going. So they even helped me move. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have anything.
Wow.
So I bought a cell phone the next day. That night, that afternoon, I went and bought a car, like a Chevy Cavalier, to drive to Louisville and just
because you were in
move into an out in Cleveland.
Cleveland, yeah.
5 hours, right down 71.
Not bad.
And, so I moved in, crashed on a floor with no at some apartment place, and just showed up to work the next day. And
that what was your initial deal money wise?
I don't know if they say this to everybody, but I think a lot of people were on $350 and $500, and he goes, we're going to sign you $750 a week, because I think they had signed like Lashley and a couple other guys to better than a lot of people were getting, I think. And he goes, don't say anything. And he didn't do it like in a jerk, but he was like, a lot of people aren't getting this, so maybe don't talk about it. Like, yeah, sure, no problem. I'm happy to be here, you know. And so I... $750 a week, which was, to me, I'd been a wrestling coach at my high school, which was $1,000 for the year, which was,
wow,
you know, like 80 hours a week. And I was bouncing at a bar and working at a Vitamin World, which I think are now out of business or something, which is along the lines of Vitamin Shop. So I was like, $750 a week, that's mind blowing, you know, to me. So 3-year deal, and it slightly went up each year or something like that. But
were you a wrestling fan growing up, Doc?
I would sort of casually watch here and there, but never really watched on a regular basis. So
you're from Chicago.
Yeah. You know, so definitely a big
did
wrestling
town.
Did you
watch Bozo for the Archway Cookies when you throw the ball in the buckets?
I did actually. In fact,
Bozo's
I remember.
From Chicago?
Yeah.
Really?
Because when we first got cable, that was the channel or whatever, the Chicago channel. We got the Cubs games and you got.
Was it WSB?
WGN?
WGN, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can see they get the first two buckets, then everybody always miss. They get the Archway Cookies. I don't know how far you got to the end.
You know what's funny is that Punk was actually on Bozo the Clown.
I think someone told me he was on that show, yeah.
It's on YouTube.
I did go to a taping, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I did go to a taping when I was a little...
Maybe you're at the one that Punk was at.
I think I'm a little older than he is, so he was probably there sometime after I was there. But I remember being there with my mother and one of my sisters, and... you know, they go around the crowd and they've got the spotlight where they're trying to find the person. And when the spotlight hit my sister. Yeah. And so the camera, you know, it like snap pans over to her. Like, and she hides underneath the, you know, the bleachers and everything because she didn't want to be on it or anything like that. And I was like trying to inch my way over so I could be the one throwing the ball.
One of us, right?
So when you came in as they said, we got this great idea. We're bringing you out of OVW, brother. We're going to put you on with Chavo.
One of the first things they told me was don't get any tattoos. Before there was like rules about getting tattoos. It was just like, don't get any tattoos. Kurt Angle is killing it right now. Like doing awesome. We know that you have this amateur background. You're this clean cut kid. Stay like this. Don't grow your hair out. Don't get into trouble. Mm-hmm. I was wearing a singlet with like the straps down or something. Yeah. And they said, that's, you know, we got this idea. Maybe you'll be his protege. I'm like, what? This
really?
Crazy. Yeah. It was just kind of.
Yeah, throwing
there,
darts.
But, you know, it's not quite Toxic Avenger 6 or whatever, but it's a nice hanging carrot. But I was like, well, okay, yeah, sure. I wasn't going to get any. Yeah, whatever. And then slowly but surely there was, they had stuff. They had ideas, and then eventually Tommy Dreamer became the in-between guy instead of Dr. Tom. And then a bunch of us were out at a signing for an OVW show, and they were calling somebody to give him some info. And he goes, "Hey, could you just pass the phone to Nick at the time?"
What was my name?
Like, it's not Dolph.
Yeah.
And hey, it's Tommy. Hey, listen, do you have any caddy clothes? I go,
"You gotta do this is Tommy.
Yeah,
do you
this
have
is Tommy Dreamer. Hey,
you
Nick,
have any caddy clothes?
You're coming to Monday Night Raw." And I'm like, "Oh, cool. Where am I sitting?" I go, "Oh, no, you're on the show." Like, "Oh, okay. Do you have golf clothes?" I go, "No."
Who has golf clothes?
Yeah, he's like, I go,
"What
no.
are golf clothes?"
Yeah. That's what I said. Like, dressed like an idiot. Dressed like Miz, but like 100 years old or something.
Knickers and a
yeah.
big beret and like a scarf or what? Like a...
I pictured Caddyshack. I'm like, God, the one guy had the sleeveless shirt and the gloves. Roddy like the Dice Clay gloves. Yeah. Yeah, Dangerfield. And I was like, he goes, "Well, you better get some. Tomorrow you fly out at 2 p.m. and you're going to Raw." I'm like, "Okay, thanks. Hey, can you pass the phone to Mickey James?" Like, "Oh, okay, here." Some pass on thing. Ran home and was like, "Oh, there's a Golfer's World near me." There was no golfing. There was just regular polos. I'm like, "This isn't going to work." But I eventually found like a bunch of brightly colored polo shirts and khaki shorts and cut the sleeves off because I had some big guns.
Of course, so brother.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, brother. As I've gone to cut the sleeves off almost every shirt that I own now.
Except for the one you have now, which is Evolution on it, but that's not Evolution, is it?
No, I'm just a big fan of not teaching.
Is that actually the...
This is their...
The Triple H Evolution?
This is their
okay.
t-shirt, yeah.
You get that for free?
Of course I did.
I see Triple H in the middle.
But some WWE shirts are squishy. Very
stretchy.
And this is one of them. And
okay,
it's
fits
very
good, brother. Very clingy, shows off your muscles.
The other one I have is sleeveless.
Okay.
Yeah. My bumper sticker says that my other shirt is sleeveless, probably, or something.
So what's the mindset when you get there? They say, like, did they even explain what you're supposed to do as Chavo's caddy?
Afterthought of, like, 20,000 other things going on a Monday Night Raw. And honestly, I don't even remember. I think the Diva Search girls were there, and I remember seeing them, like, "Whoa, that's cool." And I was like, I think it was me and it was Chavo versus Shelton Benjamin, and it ended up getting bumped from Raw to Heat.
Mm.
And long story short, I was going to take a real golf club and break it over Shelton's back. And I was like, "Oh, do these things break like that? Like, I don't know. I've never had a golf club." And we did something distraction. I smashed it over his back, and I got it. I was like, "I'm not going to not break this thing, you know?" So I hit him pretty hard.
If people only knew, right? Like,
yeah.
Just break it over his back. They just...
Like, I'm like, "Oh, so what's the deal? Yeah, you're with Chavo. You guys are next. And go break this thing over his back. And but don't let the ref see and don't do this." And I'm like, "Wait, what?"
Like, fans think that, like, "Oh, it's just a fake golf club." Oh, I remember when they had Mark Henry, he was bending frying pans. And everybody in the crowd thinks it's a bolt frying pan.
Right?
But it's a real frying pan, and he's really bending it.
Yeah.
But what difference? They should have just given him a plastic one. No one believes it anyways.
Rip it like paper because no one believes it, and the guy's so damn strong.
It's like the elimination chamber. People go, "What's that made of?" It's made out of steel, and it's a grate, and it kills. It hurts so bad.
The worst thing, there's no loud noise.
It's terrible.
So there's no payoff for you hurting yourself every time you fall, except for you going, "Ow, that hurts." And everyone's like, "Man, why is he being such a baby?"
It looks like crap, and hurts like... It's the worst. Anybody listening, the Elimination Chamber is the worst structure that was obviously created by someone who's not a wrestler.
Yeah. And if those chains were just a little bit looser, so when you fell and got hurt really bad, it would go...
Right.
It would be like, "Oh, cool, this is worth it. People understand my pain." Everything hurts in that damn match.
Yes.
Those are the worst.
Another good one is the pod has enough space between the top of the pod and the roof that you can crouch on it, but you can't stand up on it. So you try and jump, but you can't really jump. It's like, couldn't you have given us an extra 2 feet? You know what I mean?
Another quick thing about that, the first one I was saying, you were in there with me.
Elimination
Chamber. A bunch of us last year or 2 years ago, whatever. And I'd never been in there, and I'm a little claustrophobic. So I was like, "Oh, this won't be a big deal. It's chains behind me." So I get in there, and I see that they're starting to shut the plastic pod case, and they shut it. And I'm just like playing it cool because I'm the show off. So I'm like, "Yeah, this is cool." And I'm slowly like starting to breathe real fast. And I'm like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." And I see that people are doing crazy things in the ring. And I was turning to the outside to the chains without people seeing me, putting my mouth to the holes of the chains going and turn around like, "Ah, yeah, geez, these guys, what am I in there?" And luckily I was like second or third. If I was sixth or whatever, I might have freaked out.
That's
like,
crazy.
I was like panicking. Like I was... my like this awful thing for me, I think, is just to be locked in a bathroom, an airplane bathroom, and nowhere to go.
It
just freaks me out. And I could see through the one, and there's the chain holes behind me, and I was still just. This is nonchalant, like, hey, brother, yeah, thanks for cheering for me. Hey, what's going on in the ring? Is this me? Like, I don't even care. It was starting to freak me out. Yeah.
And what do you think, Doc? I mean, you sit ringside. We're kind of making a little bit of a joke, but you watch every match
right. On
basically every show. Which, like, we're talking about the Elimination Chamber, there's cage matches, there's all these different types. Do you cringe when you have to watch matches like this, if it's a ladder match or a cage match, or is it just kind of... like watching a football game if you're the team doctor at a football team?
Well, it's funny. I think that whenever there's objects that are involved in the matches, be it tables, ladders, you know, the chamber or anything like that, that always seems to be the environment where there's, you know, going to be a higher risk of injury. So I think I'm definitely, I mean, not that I'm not attuned to what's going on during other matches, but I think you pay extra attention during those matches just because I think the risk of injury is probably higher when you start involving objects and chambers
bite.
And things like that.
Those
things
bite, man. Yeah. They catch you. I can imagine. You know, you lose teeth, you get cut open, it's sliced open, or whatever it may be, right?
Right, so we've put plenty of stitches in people from chambers and tables.
No, but this is the new rule, too, is that if you get cut during a match, you have to...
Find a way to stop the match without just flat out going throwing a towel in or something.
Which is basically what you're doing, just like saying stop.
This is time we're stopping
out.
This. Yeah,
the show is over, and you have to come in and see if it's worth stitches or what's kind of the rule.
Well, I think once we get in there, if there is blood, the referees have been instructed to temporarily suspend the match, so it's not necessarily stop, but at least suspended to the point where member of the medical staff can get in there, kind of evaluate, and the decision making is this something that can be controlled as far as the bleeding and allow the match to continue, in which case we would do that, or is this something that the bleeding is significant or severe enough that regardless of what we do for sort of a quick fix, we can't stop the bleeding, and in which point we would call the match at that point.
Has that happened quite often?
98% of the time we're able to control the bleeding, and there's, little tricks of the trade with
Vaseline,
and we put a special medication in there that causes the blood vessels to kind of clamp down when you put the Vaseline on there, so it adds a little bit of, it's kind of like a little extra punch to it. So even larger cuts, and I think I've done this with you, Chris, maybe a couple of times, where we've put some of the Vaseline that has the medication in it that closes down the blood vessels and, get it to stop and then allow the match to continue. And then after the match, deal with it in terms of having to sew it up or do whatever we do with it.
All right, I'm going to stop here because we started talking about concussions and injuries. Both Dolph and I have had concussions, and Doc Amen has treated a lot of the guys for those concussions. So you hear all about that on Friday, along with stories from Dolph's Spirit Squad days. And he'll fill us in on what he's been doing in his spare time. It involves comedy and clubs. You can put two and two together, right? So come on, come back for part two on Friday with Dolph and Doc. Don't you dare miss it. Thanks to Dolph Ziggler and Doc Amen, and thanks to M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold for checking in and giving us the lowdown on their new video game, Hail to the King, Deathbat. It's available for Androids and iPhones. Download it at Google Play or the App Store. Now listen, it's a tough game. There's a lot going on. So if you're a beginner and you need a little help, there's a free tutorial done by Matt himself for the game on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for Hail to the King Deathbat Tutorial. It'll pop right up and Matt will guide you through the steps on how to beat this game and how to even play the elusive Johnny Christ character. And how about that news? Avenged playing China next year. They've got dates starting in Southeast Asia in January. The dates in China will be released as soon as the Chinese government gives the okay, and they're very serious about everything entertainment wise that happens over there. I even talk about it and write about it in my new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. So the Chinese keep everything secret, so those Avenged Sevenfold shows, keep that info between us for now, okay? Shh, don't tell anybody. So thanks for keeping that secret, and thanks for joining me for two podcasts a week. I wouldn't be able to do it if it wasn't for you guys downloading every single
single week, twice a week. And if not, for my Sexy Beast sponsors who help us cover the production costs of doing two shows every week. If you want to help support me and help this show, easiest way to do that, online shopping through my Amazon links. You know how you can do that. Easy to find. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, US, UK, and Canada A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No hidden fees, extra charges. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. So I appreciate that. Thanks once again to M Shadows. And come back on Friday for part two of Dolph Ziggler, Doc Amon. Don't you dare miss it. In the meantime and in between times, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.